He never said he wasn't, so.
I'm recording.
All right, let's call this meeting to order here and we can get going on our agenda here. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Has everyone had a chance to look over the minutes here? Can we get a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll move that.
All right.
I'll second it.
All right, any discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion carried. And no one here from the public for comment. And so that brings us right into the Wilmer Y project. So we have Gene and Fernando here.
Fernando is here.
Here as a councilman.
Separate topic.
Oh, you are here for, okay.
I don't wish to railroad your meeting, but introducing your new council person might lead the discussion as opposed to the Wilmer Y, if you care.
Yeah.
No, this is your show, Gene. It's all about you, man.
Okay.
Fernando is here as a visitor today.
Okay, well, thanks for coming, Fernando.
We've been recruiting him since he came in the door.
Yeah.
Since we're going to lose Dennis Anderson.
Yes.
I need to focus on Wilmer Y, but I second the motion. I hate to do this, but I need to run this PowerPoint slide from, I think from over here.
Can you see all right?
Ability.
Close enough.
Yeah, talk loud.
I'll.
How's the microphone? Will it work? No, I don't want it? Okay.
Should we bring that over there?
Turn this part, it's a good idea.
I'm with MinDOT District 8 here at Wilmer, the Wilmer office. And I'm the Assistant Project Manager for the Wilmer Y project. The Wilmer Y project is a huge project and it's a really important one we're getting out here. And on behalf of the several partners, MinDOT and our project manager, Paul Rasmussen, we appreciate having the opportunity to come out and visit. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. For tonight, I want to talk about, I've got kind of a two-part agenda. The front, part number one, I'm going to call project information, is some of you may have seen this information before. It's about the project, nuts and bolts, timing, etc. But I also want to get your attention to part two, and that's public engagement. And that's got a second part for this is, not only are we providing this public engagement about the project, but this group has a special role in that you may be able to help us continue our public engagement. But we'll come to that. And then also, of course, some discussion, questions and answers at the end. I want to emphasize, too, that at any time in the during the presentation, it's really informal. If you have a question you'd like to ask, if I stray into some engineering jargon or language, please raise your hand. If you'd prefer to wait till the end, that's just fine, too. But if you'd like to interrupt, then we can pick up questions anytime. I'd be glad to do so. So, from the top, the project summary. We'll talk about the project itself. And that's the title of the project is the Wilmer Rail Connector Industrial Park Access Project, or the Wilmer Y. And it's going to provide a direct connection between Marshall and Morris subdivisions of the BNSF and improved access to Wilmer's Industrial Park. Well, that's an awful lot of words and a lot of big words in some cases, but there are three things I'd like you to pull from this, and that's the Wilmer Y, that Y concept, the connection of the rail, and that industrial park access. So there's three kind of things I want you to hang on to, those three concepts from all that language. And in that regard, now I'm going to see if I can use this machine here. The Y configuration is what I want to talk about first. This is Wilmer proper. And this would be the west edge of Wilmer, County Road 5 out here you may be familiar with. And the BNSF rail has two lines that come into Wilmer. This one parallels Highway 12. That's known as the Morris subdivision of the BNSF. This line parallels Highway 23 and then 19th Avenue and on into Wilmer. That's known as the BNSF's Marshall subdivision. And those two converge around 10th Street and go out east, and that becomes the Wayzata subdivision. So there is indeed this Y configuration of rail. All right. So that's number one. That's why we talk about the Wilmer Y. It's all about that rail configuration. The rail connector, that's this red line. And we'll come back to that quite a few times as we look through the project. But this red line is the proposed connector. Currently, if the BNSF has a train on the Morris subdivision that wants to go to the Marshall subdivision, their current process brings the train into the Wilmer, into the Wilmer yard, reverses direction, and comes out south, and vice versa. So in terms of BNSF's efficiency, that's approximately, we hear different 2, 3, 4 hours, depending on weather. It's sometimes can be 8 hours, we've heard. There's varying stories. So it's a major consideration for the rail, for BNSF. So this connector will take that, whatever time that may take in town, and turn that into a 15-minute turn. It's a slower speed because of the curvature here and here, but it's still a huge savings for the rail. The third element I asked you to recall was the industrial park access. Currently, the city of Wilmer's industrial park is this neighborhood. What you're seeing here is the former airport. This is the expanding Wilmer Industrial Park. If you're familiar with this area, you'll see that Dooley Petroleum is building a new facility in this area. So it's an expanding, a growing area, and it's on the city of Wilmer's future growth plans. It's a big thing. Well, with this rail connection then, this connector line, that provides not only then with this expanding rail or industrial park, now we have rail access, we have air access, we have trunk highway access. So it's really an economic boost for the industrial park is the intent. So that's one of the key benefits. So that's the big picture of what the Wilmer Y really is going to be. Among the benefits, of course, reduces the number of trains traversing into Wilmer. Now that the Morris line and Marshall lines will still continue into Wilmer, but we anticipate that about a third to a half of the trains that would normally be on that Morris line won't have to do that turn into Wilmer. They'll be able to just turn outside of Wilmer and avoid that. So it improves the number of trains traversing into Wilmer. That's the bottom line. That's the simplest thing. And just a little subtext of what that movement really means. Between, for a train to come in on that northwest leg into Wilmer, switch directions and go out, there are approximately 12 to 15, depending on the size of the number of crossings you count, but 12 to 15 times cars or trucks or motor vehicles interface with the rail at grade, meaning not a bridge, but at grade. So it will remove all of those interface, all those possibilities of train, car. So it's a safety concern. Again, also it saves time. Those trains often sit in the yard idling, turnaround time, emissions, noise downtown. Safety, I mentioned those crossing possibilities. Economic growth, of course, the lack of crossing traffic, delays, etc. And then the industrial park. Quality of life is a general assumption based on the improved time at rail crossings, as well as multimodal. We have access in the industrial park to those multiple transportation modes. The project is really a large project in size and in complexity in terms of our partners. What I've got here is a list of the partners that are involved in the project, and all of these entities are financial contributors. Every one of these entities has a financial contribution to the project. Okay. What's not apparent is there's also very different active roles on the project. There's three or four entities, MnDOT being one, city, county, and the BNSF, that are what I call core project development. We're the folks that are actually developing the project. Where is it going to lie? The geometrics of it, etc. So we're core to the project development. Within that group also, we have some regulatory. USDOT, in this case, is represented by two federal agencies. We have Federal Rail Administration, we have a railroad project, and we also have Federal Highway Administration. This rail project is going to have a big impact on a lot of roadways. So we have two federal agencies, and the MnDOT, we are the regulatory entities within the project. And also then the final entity is MnDOT alone is the project lead. We're serving the lead role in developing the project. So many roles within here. One key element to the USDOT that I need to make clear to. USDOT is a financial contributor as well, because the this project as a whole was granted a TIGER grant. You may have heard that language. It's a transportation infrastructure generating economic recovery. That's a long term. You'll hear folks refer to that as the Obama administration's boost to the economy years back. So it has $10 million invested in the project. So there's an economic role for USDOT as well as a regulatory. And now I'm going to talk about the actual alignment and the roadways involved and some of the things we have here. One other thing I want to note is that in all of the alternatives we're going to look at, and at this point, you may want to look at the back part of your handout. The back three pages, if you will, the back three images are a little bit bigger map of these alternatives we're going to look at. I hope you don't need to move back and forth too much, but we'll talk about three alternatives that have surfaced as key alternatives, primary alternatives in the project. Alternative one, before I start into all of the alternatives, first, have the rail line, this red line, in the same place. The rail line is static in all of these images and all of these alternatives. Partially, it's found the right combination of it is approximately 2.5 miles, which is an ideal length for it to serve as a siding as well. We can park a 1.5 mile long train on one side or the other. There will be a siding at some point in the future. It also is the right distance in Willmar to serve the industrial park, the future industrial park. And it is also the right distance east to not interfere with our airport. Our airport has some very distinct landing clear zones that need to be FAA. Absolutely, we must obey those. So this is kind of the sweet spot. This is, and that in all of these alternatives, that does not change. Also in this, all of the alternatives we'll be looking at, Highway 40. This is Highway 40 east and west. And all of the alternatives, Highway 40 goes over the new rail connector. We'll see some differences up on Highway 12 that we'll talk about. But in all instances, Highway 40 goes over the rail connector. So in all instances, the rail stays in the same place. And also in all instances, Highway 40 in its configuration stays the same. And just, I don't know that this is important to you, but for detail's sake, this roadway north-south here is County Road 55, former County Road 5. And this distance to the new rail connector is approximately 600 feet. 600 feet is two turn lanes, if that helps. Two turn lanes long. So, with that, those similarities to all the alternatives, I want to now look in more detail at alternative one. Alternative one, I've got three key bullets. In this case, alternative one, Highway 12 up here stays on its existing alignment, stays right where it is. The green line indicates changes to alignment of County Road 55, because it would now not be able to connect to Highway 12 at this point, and a new alignment up here. What's not obvious in the flat map is that to get the railroad from the north side of Highway 12 to the south of Highway 12 at this point involves a very long, and we call it a skewed bridge. It's a very shallow, very flat angle between. They're almost parallel up there, obviously. And to make that crossing, it ends up to be a very long bridge and very costly. And due to businesses adjacent to Highway 12 on one side and the railroad on the other side, this roadway of this Highway 12 that would need to go up and over the new rail, actually we refer to it sometimes as being built on top of retaining walls. It would have to go straight up over the railroad, straight down. No slopes as you might see on a normal bridge, normal flow section. So that long skewed bridge and this very high, approximately 30 feet high retaining walls makes it a little bit of a tough pill for MnDOT, to be honest. It's a very costly, very difficult maintenance 30 feet in the air, snow and ice, there's a lot of difficulties involved with that. MnDOT thought, we maybe can find better, which spawned alternative two. Alternative two, in contrast, brings Highway 12 off of its existing alignment. This neighborhood here is little 7th Avenue, it's called. It's West Side Storage is about that point where it turns off. And it turns straight south for a short time, and then turns back straight east, over the railroad, over County Road 55, meets County Road 5 at this point, and comes back onto existing Highway 12. This location right here is approximately Viking Coca-Cola. If that helps you to find your location. This is Viking Coca-Cola at this end. This distance is, at this, where my cursor is now, that is currently the stoplight at County Road 5. In essence, that stoplight would just be shifted down.
It'd be a stoplight there then at 5 and...
We anticipate it would be a stoplight there, yes. It hasn't been absolutely determined, but yeah, we anticipate a stoplight. So this alignment then, what that results in, and it seems like much more road work, but to be honest, these bridges are much simpler. They're what we call a square bridge or a perpendicular bridge. They're much less costly. They're also, the retaining wall issue is gone. We'd be able to use typical roadway fills, slopes, build it up instead of on top of a structure, on top of a retaining wall structure. One key also though, yes?
Between the two bridges there, mm-hmm. On the new 12 there, what's like the distance between that, the two bridges?
600 feet.
600 feet, okay.
600 feet.
So do they build that up so it's all one?
That would be very much a uniform grade flat. You would come up to rise over. It would be somewhat of an upgrade toward the railroad because the clearance we need over the railroad is quite a bit greater than we need over the county road. So we
sure.
Come up over County Road 55 with a normal bridge clearance, continue up to cross over the rail, and then come down. Mm-hmm. So that would be the approach. Minimizing that fill. We're in an area out here that's quite flat, and finding fill, we call it borrow. We borrow dirt from here and there to build our roadway. That's the the engineering term, it's borrow. So we need borrow. Where are we gonna get our dirt? So anything we can do to maintain a grade that's closer to the existing grade is okay. So we're keeping it down if we can. So yeah, this indeed would, a profile that would cross here would be quite flat. Would be quite flat. One thing you'll notice here, I touched on the differences between one and two. One that surfaced, which I've been referring to this as alternative two, this became 2A. Right at this point, you'll notice, to orient you, this area right here is known as First Avenue. It is Farm Service Elevator, PALS, Surplus Warehouse, Surplus Warehouse, and those businesses, okay, that's to orient you. Now, that First Avenue is actually an extension of County Road 55. This drawing, when it was officially put together as alternative two, left a crossing there. You can see we'd have an at-grade crossing, First Avenue, crossing the new rail connector. That surfaced as a safety issue. That was, in fact, in our federal partner's eyes, that was a no-go. That was a no-go. So that it made alternative two become alternative 2A and spawned alternative 2B. Alternative 2B, the first three bullets, you'll know, very same. We're going to reroute Highway 12 off of its existing alignment. We're going to use those shorter, simpler bridges. We're going to eliminate those high retaining walls. However, we are going to not allow that at-grade crossing on First Avenue. And we're going to provide a new access between new Highway 12 and First Avenue with this little roadway right in there. We're going to provide a new access in that area. So that's the difference between 2A and 2B. And for the very observant among you, you may notice that between 2A and 2B, where my cursor is, we've removed that first bridge over County Road 55. And that's worth, ooh, I better not touch that. That's worth a little more discussion. In alternative 2A, we saw we had a bridge here, a We called this, it appeared to be a ramp or a loop like you might see at an interchange. And what that served with this crossing in place, we anticipate a lot of agricultural vehicles using this to access Farm Service Elevator and most and in and out. Okay. With this access closed, this crossing movement of the trucks, ag vehicles, goes away. So this is an open road, but it only serves a few businesses up here. So without that truck crossing traffic there, we really don't need, then that will be an at-grade crossing. Those would come together, and we would end up with stop sign here, and Highway 12 going through.
But all those trucks that are going to the Farm Service Elevator would just turn, make a right-hand turn right there.
Yes.
So they're still going to hit the intersection.
They're coming to that intersection, absolutely. Right. The difference is, yeah, the different, and absolutely right. There are a certain number of vehicles that are going to come to that intersection, and or and then also to this, if indeed this is their destination, this and this. That's absolutely the case. And it's a traffic safety unique item that the difference in crash statistics from a crossing movement to a right turn movement and a left turn movement with left turn lanes is astronomically different. The crossing movement, without the crossing movement, we have not much of a need. No need for a bridge there. So that's been removed. The crossing movement is the safety issue. It's not intuitive. I'll grant you that, but there's a lot of safety studies that we looked at and did a real in-depth analysis between 2A and 2B. Good observation.
From the when you turn to the north into that Farm Service area, you're going off to the west again. There was no logical location where you could just go form a street going straight north to another road.
Again, in this case, the flat map doesn't do justice. The bridge over the existing rail over the new rail connector. Mm-hmm. Again, that height.
Sorry, yeah.
The slopes. If I could draw.
Yeah.
The slope at a high fill is this wide. As the fill comes down, it's narrower and narrower. So in order to not have this roadway go straight up an inslope to a high bridge, this
is
the
answer. Can you move that road farther to the east, right there? Was there no place to get through those?
To be honest, as a Department of Transportation, as a transportation provider, we can pick up whatever works for you. However, what this reflects is a cost savings. In this case, we were able to go between buildings. We don't have to buy any buildings. We actually improved the existing landowners' perception of their viability of their property. As a transportation agency, we could have gone diagonally across. Short, sweet, flat, doesn't matter. However, in terms of not buying out of business, in terms of meeting the intended need of the current landowner, this is the approach. Yeah. Seems a small thing, but it is also a minor cost consideration, to be honest. So that's alternative 2B, and 2B is really where we are today. Yes, Barbara.
Could you just explain how that, what about the businesses? And now is that Highway 12 that's being rerouted from, what's going to happen with the businesses there? Are they going to be able to, is the old Highway 12 still going to be in existence? Is there going to be?
Yeah, these darker black lines you're seeing here and here, those will be removed. That black line we in our engineering term is obliteration. We're going to remove those. So these businesses along here, Farm Service Elevator and Palace, etc., we will reconstruct this little corner, and they will have this loop. You'll be able to come up County Road 5, turn left, same as you always have. It won't be Highway 12, it will be some First Avenue or some other such name. They'll be able to return to Highway 12 this way, or, so this indeed, as if you can follow my cursor, this little loop will still be viable. That will be viable. They can do any number of ways. Likewise in this area, this will be connected. So we'll have Fabric Warehouse in this neighborhood. So this again will be connected. But this crossing at grade will not happen. That's right now where we stand. Does that help?
Yeah.
Those connections. It is a little, this is a kind of a high level, kind of a crude map just to portray the big picture. So it's not the detail that I'd like to have to be able to explain your question, answer your question well.
I got it. I'm not following. Now, into the industrial park, mm-hmm. there'll be like a chute line. I don't know what you call it.
As far as the rail?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, at this point, what we're going to provide is just called a turnout and 500 feet of track. The idea of building rail into the industrial park doesn't have tenants yet.
Mm-hmm.
So the intent, the idea that they would build a rail and then push tenants to the track, no. We're going to give you a little stub, a little turnout. You establish where your tenants would like to be and what configuration. Then the track will come to them.
Okay.
So it's the city's folks, the EDC is right on board with that, right on track with that.
Well, that makes sense.
Yep, it's a turnout provided. Right now, generally speaking, the turnout is anticipated to be right in the neighborhood of the end of the existing, or the old airport, normally,
okay.
as a general area. This alternative 2B that we're looking at now has worked its way through more processes, more approvals than any other. None have come as far, and it is right now what we're calling the staff recommended alternative, and it is moving forward. So with that, I want to move to the schedule a little bit. And first off, I want to this is just a high level look. A couple things I want to bring your attention to on this. This slide, this area on the top here is this is what we're in right now, this environmental and pre-design process. We're in this process right now. It's federal process is called an environmental assessment, an EA, and we're going to come back to that. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that EA, but that's where we are right now. One more item I want to bring your attention to here is you'll see here this second tier is design. Third tier is construction, and it's not apparent perhaps, but that this is unique, these two overlap. And that's very unique for transportation projects. Usually these are back to front, end to end. We design up to 100%, we bid, and then we construct. Design, bid, construct. Okay. This process, we're using what we call design build. We're going to let one contract for finishing our design, we're going to have a preliminary design work done. We're going to have our geometric layout done. We're going to provide that to a contracting team that will finish the design and start the construction at the same time. There are phases of construction, elements of construction that can be started really early, and they'll start on those just as soon as possible, and then they'll continue to design as they build. So a design build is a new term for you. Under public engagement, the only thing I'd like to bring your attention to is this shows a gap, but it's not a gap, it's a period of less intense public engagement. Right now, in this preliminary design and environmental assessment process, you can see we are having meetings just like we are today, bringing information out. We'll pause as we get into the letting period and let that project, and then as construction starts, we'll be back at the table, we'll be back in the back at your door. This design build process is not typical for MnDOT. It's targeted at larger projects. It's targeted at projects that have a quicker timeline, and we do have a sunset on the federal funds, the Tiger Grant. So we need to see this happen. And it's also financially viable for the BNSF now. Every day that passes with less oil train traffic, they find it less and less attractive to build. So we intend to move as quickly as we can. So now the kind of the current project status, I mentioned the environmental assessment, and that's kind of key to some of our later conversation. Environmental assessment is a federal document, and it's a, I call it a decision-making document. It walks us through, did you ask this question? Did you ask this question? Have you spoken to this group? Did you analyze this? Does it have a wetland? All these questions. And in doing this, answering the questions, developing, you arrive at a decision. It's a decision-making process. So that's what we're using. And that has been drafted. It has now been submitted to the FHWA and FRA, Federal Rail Administration, Federal Highway Administration, for their review and comment. That's a major milestone for us. Bullet number two there is the layout. And again, the maps you've been looking at, those are kind of a crude depiction of that layout. What does the geometry look like? Will this be over, under? Will there be a turn lane? Will there be a signal? How about a bike path? And that's the geometric layout that we'll be continuing to refine. We hope to have that done within the month of November. And we're continuing our public engagement activities. Again, and public engagement is a portion of and a requirement of environmental assessment. So
if you can go back to 2B,
mm-hmm.
please.
Sure, let's see if I can do that.
And you talked about bike trails, and that seems to be a big thing. You know, I know you got that little cursor. What's your thought, or are they going to be, where would they be stationed or put? Or
right now, the only trail, the only recreational facility of any sort on the project is a trail that parallels County Road 5 about where my cursor is. So, and at this point, there's no, based on discussions with the city and with the county, DNR, there has been no emphasis, MnDOT's bike and peds unit, there's been no emphasis on expanding bike trail to the project. But what is included on the project at this location parallel to County Road 5, on the easterly side of County Road 5, we'll continue that. We'll have appropriate ADA compliant signal systems, push buttons, audible signal system crossing at the signal and so forth. So it is part of the project, but in this case, only at the trail. There really is no pedestrian access out in this industrial area.
And it's currently already there.
Correct. Yeah. It will only be a matter of bringing it and maintaining it to a higher level of ADA accessibility. So we are continuing our public engagement activities. We're at a point now of kind of counting up our, where are we? Top bullet there, where our layout should be completed and pretty much a nod of confirmation from all of our partners the end of the month, 1st of December approximately. Our drafted environmental assessment has been submitted to the federal agencies. There's a public, the EA is a long process, and it involves a huge public comment period as well as public engagement, and I want to come back to that. Public hearing, we anticipate sometime in February, and then after that, we have several, it's as many complexities and partners as there are on the project. We have municipal consent, we have several agreements between the rail, private entity, and the governments. The city's contribution to our project is a lot of right-of-way. The right-of-way agreements, the number of agreements is staggering. Design build letting in November of 17 is our target. And that's a little over a year. Actually, that has been updated now. We're looking at probably December of 17. But nonetheless, a little over a year from now, we hope to be up for letting. With construction to start in the spring of 2018, we anticipate 2 years of roadway construction, and two summers of roadway construction, and one summer of rail construction. So final completion in fall of 2020. Public engagement. And here's where I'm going to turn the tables on you a little bit here. We're going to start with what we've done to date. And to be honest, I'm kind of proud of our public engagement. We've done a lot of work to bring our project out to a lot of folks. We've had 3 open houses that we've held. We've had ongoing, we've had many meetings with our local governments, city and county, townships as well, and those are ongoing. We continually meet with those folks. Community presentations, we'll be meeting yet. I think the only one we have not met with on this group is Kiwanis. That's coming up in November. We're due to meet with them, but we've met with many groups and, several times in some cases. Just today, the 2 focus groups noted their law enforcement, all of our emergency responders, and freight haulers. We just today met at the MnDOT offices and sat with those folks and talked specifically about their needs and concerns on the project. So we continue to find out what all these pieces are part of the environmental assessment. We bring them all together. Pop-up events, that's in reference to we short notice show up. We did the county fair. We did a little booth at the county fair. And we had great, great feedback, actually. We got a lot of people stopped and checked in on this. We showed up at the farmer's market out at the YMCA. So we were the Wilmer Y at the Wilmer Y. So it was a really nice thing, though. We met some folks that we wouldn't have otherwise seen, some age groups that we don't typically engage at an open house or those types of things. It was a good event. Targeted meetings. This is where I'm going to ask for your input very soon here. We have had the opportunity to present similarly at the mosque in Wilmer now. So we have made some inroads into the Somali and Islamic community. More to be done, more hopefully to be done on that front, and we'll talk about that. We do have an engagement set up through Assembly of God Church with the Hispanic Latino community, but nonetheless, more effort could be put into those. But we are, we have made many outreach efforts, but we're not finding the inroads we're looking for just yet. And again, the last piece, there's that public hearing we anticipate February of 2017. So that's our to-date pieces of public engagement. Now, the future. And this is where you guys come in. Now I'm going to just, I can leave this up there, but basically, we could use your help. If you have connections, we need to get out more. We need to have this sort of conversation and discussion. So we're seeking those connections. We're not having the best of luck, to be honest, in finding those connections. We are ready and willing to sit down at the table. We have staff aboard for public just for this purpose. I end up carrying out the product in many cases, but we have interpreters. We have translation for materials in other languages as needed. So we're more than ready and willing to do the legwork if you can help us make some connections. So with that,
Gene, why do you need public so much public connections?
It's got 2 answers. It's the right thing to do. What we do. Maybe within that, it's the right thing to do. It's something that MnDOT and conservation would be doing much, much more of and better at. It's also a requirement of our federal partners. As a federally funded project, it's a little cold, crass, perhaps, but if we were a county agency, or a city, we got the money, do it. Not in a state agency, and certainly not with federal dollars. So it's the right thing to do, for starters, but it is also a requirement of the environmental
system. People who come in, why wouldn't everybody think it's a good idea?
Well, I don't know that we will learn from some of the targeted population we're reaching that it is not, but it is the right thing to share the information, have them aware, be aware of the project. It's a community project. It's a more than just MnDOT building this road out. It's a part of our community, and we need to see that that's carried through. So that's the reason to be here.
Do you feel like there's groups of people that you are missing that you would like to get access to? I mean, like, have you been to, like, the Pennock City Council and Kirkowen? And, I mean, you know, that's what I think about is those west on Highway 12.
Particularly Pennock.
Yes. You know, I mean, no matter what, there's going to be two summers that's going to disrupt their life, you know, so.
Yeah. That's a good comment.
And they always feel neglected.
Yeah, probably are.
No, I keep running to my engineering hat. Want to answer, fix that. I can fix that because this really is going to be a pretty small impact on Highway 12 traffic, to be honest. Mm-hmm. This construction will take place, we call it offline. Highway 12 will continue to flow. We'll be out here building bridges.
But there are rumblings hearing about how is that going to impact it. So
we need to
They would be using this new road.
Right.
As much as anybody.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, probably even more than most people are willing.
Yeah. And, I was jumping to the impact of during construction. Yeah. That will be constructed
right.
out there. We'll continue to
yeah,
work
right.
on Highway 12 as we construct those bridges. In fact, a little more detail on that is, if you wouldn't mind. The intent right now, we show 2018-2019 as roadway construction years, those summers. The likelihood that the soil conditions, southwest Wilmer area, are not ideal. They're in some cases really poor. So we anticipate we may have a year settlement period where we would build the bridge fills, this high fill, and those may have to sit a year to compress the weak soils underneath. So, but nonetheless, within that time frame, though, we anticipate that we will have the roadway completely constructed, roadway bridges. The transition from Highway 12 in its current position to Highway 12 in its new position, with everything built, we anticipate 2 to 3 months. And we'd have some sort of temporary detour in place to move it over. And then we take the new road, the old road. County Road 55, I can't be quite as sure about. Highway 40, I can't be quite as sure about. But the traffic volumes there are much less, much, much less than Highway 12. So, in terms of the long term use of Highway 12 and the commuters and so forth, the alignment that's proposed there is about, I think it has a half a mile, a three-fourths of a mile of additional edge. If I were to take the beginning and the end, and it used to be a straight line, now it's like almost less than three-fourths of a mile difference. So it's not a major change in mileage. It's going to have, we are building curvature that is designed, we call it, design speed of 65 miles per hour. Then 60 miles per hour, then 60 miles. So we're sort of transitioning the motoring public to a more urban approach as we reach the edge of Wilmer. So to the typical motorist traveling through Wilmer, one stop sign, same as before, or stoplight, same as before. Slightly lower design speeds, perhaps, we don't see a huge impact to the average motoring public. Ag vehicles, commercial vehicles. We have some discussions to have, but we are, again, the details you see on those maps in front of you there don't allow us to show the level of acceleration lanes, left turn lanes, right lane, right turn lanes, etc. It is built into that philosophy of those types of vehicles and that types of use are built into the final geometric layout.
If the trains are outside of town too, isn't there something about that sometimes we worry about trains exploding, right? Having like explosive things. So if we look at a world in which trains are potentially more dangerous, then we're only getting them even more outside Palmer, right? Outside the city.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what groups of people are you needing us to help you reach?
Well, just recently it has been the Latino population. We just made one connection. That is scheduled for December 4th out of Assembly of God. The Somali or Islamic population, we did have some luck, we did have, we were asked to come in and visit at the mosque. We offered this presentation with a few folks. And that turned out to be a very good discussion. I think it was a good discussion, but it was fairly focused. It was, you know, I wasn't able to attend that particular one, but I think the approach from the mosque or from the Islamic community was, I think, six people. They had six gentlemen that attended. So it was a relatively small group, but any opportunity, I guess, if those opportunities don't, if we aren't able to find those, we need to show due diligence, and we aren't even quite able to do that sometimes.
So federally, you have to prove that you tried to meet with these people, you know, different groups of people.
Yeah, there is a certain understanding that we are in West Central Minnesota, and it's a fairly new population. So there is some understanding of the difficulties of reaching out to these groups. It is acknowledged, but there is also a history of projects that have had serious issues because we didn't talk to this group. We need to make sure.
Sure.
And it's what we need to do.
Sure.
Every group we've spoken to, by the way, every group we've spoken to has expressed a lot of appreciation for having the opportunity to hear about it. So it's rewarding in that way. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I can think of two possible issues, but they're probably conflicting. One is that will this result in a reduction of jobs in the rail yard? So is there a job impact, a reduction in railroad jobs?
I don't know that I can answer that. I think if we have a really unique situation and we're working with Burlington Northern. Burlington Northern is not only a private entity, but a very large corporate private entity. You think government has red tape? My goodness, bureaucracy.
I've heard rail workers worry that jobs will be lost.
It seems like the railroad's been a capacity hauling the oil and grain and things that are behind sometimes. If they can speed trucks up, it just means they'll be able to run more trains. So they'd add a train crew. You know, if they can take a couple hours off, that line would produce a little bit more, a few more trains. And the longer term, they're making these lines in North Dakota one way. And I would picture they're going to run this one, you know, like 12 or 24 hours straight one way, and they want to pull off all the trains and then just reverse it, just let some of those sit. So they can just run packs of trains going one way. And that'll add people.
Something I, BNSF perhaps, an economist perhaps could answer. But BNSF has said no, that's not the case. That's not what this is about. This is about efficiency.
They've been adding jobs recently, you know, for adding trains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So because we only have about 10 minutes left. No, you're good. We just want to make sure we understand how we can help you. So
one thing I would offer too, if you, I've asked you to quickly provide, well, that's not fair. What I would like to do is make sure that if you go to your browser, your web browser, your search engine, and type in the Wilmer Y with a W-Y-E, you will find our website. In the contacts, you'll find myself, Paul Rasmussen, our project manager, Mandy Schmidt, our public affairs person. And if there's a connection you can help us make, or an idea, or comment about the project, that's fine too. That's what we're about. So for this moment, take a look at that. Mm-hmm. We're always putting updates out there. You'll see some of the later layout information and drawings and so forth. So
okay.
I would encourage you to take a look there.
Mm-hmm.
And watch updates.
Go ahead.
I just have one question. Certainly, assuming that I don't want to take the time for what you're after here, but the bridge and Highway 23, the state is doing that. Is that just done because the county is interested in putting the bridge across the south side? Or is it just a coincidence that the state is funding that this year?
It is a coincidence. It is a coincidence.
It was planned separate of this
project. That project that is currently under construction,
It's okay. We don't have much else to discuss.
That project that's currently under construction is a county project that got some state dollars to help solve some traffic problems at Highway 23 and County Road 5. Okay, that was funded on its own.
And that's based on accidents.
That's based on crash data. Correct. Right. So that stands on its own. The Wilmer Y stands on its own. It has the BNSF support, it got Tiger Grant, it got, it really doesn't have a lot of, to be honest, a lot of roadway benefit. This is a rail project that has a big impact on roadway that we need to address, okay? But it also has, to some degree, some safety, some economic impact, et cetera, that we're gonna, MnDOT is fully in support of, however. So those, they do stand alone, they are not related. I do wanna introduce a third project, however, that you will hear about if you have not already. The current project, they're actually building the highway or the bridge over 23 now.
Mm-hmm.
There's some pavement in place, it's construction. One more, why these two just about meet. There's actually a county project that is brewing. It's about a $7 million project to kind of finish, if you will, this connect the County Road 55 over two rail lines, meet Highway 23 ramp, etc. So there's a third project in the hopper. It is not a state highway project. We have tapped more funds to finish the Wilmer Y project than we ever thought we'd be able to do. The idea that when this got a Tiger Grant and the BNSF put their chips in, the idea that MnDOT would find, the state would find this level of funding was from where? From what? It can't happen. Our governor and our commissioner said, well, we're going to find it. This is a good project. We need to make it happen. So it's actually that bonding money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really unique. But that's the extent. Now, the county's project in the middle there, that's got its own funding questions.
So that second bridge is a county project, and the county sounds determined to do it.
Indeed.
But the funding part isn't resolved.
That project continues to grow in cost as well.
Yep.
So that's a struggle.
To take County Road 5 over the top of
the railroad?
Yeah, actually it would become, as it comes, the current project touches down about 19th Avenue, as opposed to touching down, that would stay up and continue over both existing Marshall subdivision and the curvature of the Y. Those would be, it results in those, but it results in a long, long bridge, just about a $4 million bridge to get over that span. Bridges are tricky.
Mm-hmm.
More time.
Mm-hmm.
The cost goes up exponentially.
So in the meantime, we can be checking your website, and if we have questions, we can direct them to you, or Mandy was contacted me.
Paul Rasmussen is our project manager.
Mm-hmm.
I serve as the assistant project manager, but many of the public engagement pieces, Mandy or I or Paul are more than happy to try to address those for you.
Very good. And if you need our help specifically, you think of some group or something you want us to help you with, you can let us know too.
Very good. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thanks for coming, Jean.
Yes.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks for
you.
Thank
you.
Thanks for so much.
Thank you.
There's a lot to share.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you. All right, well, very good. So discussion of educational ideas and topics. You know, we've covered a lot of different meetings over the last few months, and so I think a good idea, now if you look at next meeting day, we've set for January 17th, skipping the December meeting. Just December gets pretty crazy with Christmas and
good
holiday
idea.
Events. And so if we meet January 17th, I'd like to have that as a meeting to discuss all of what we've covered in the last few months and not have, you know, an outside group come in to talk to us, unless there's something urgent, of course. But I think it'd be good for us to recap and discuss, you know, what we've learned so far and where we'd kind of like to go from here as well.
And then maybe if everybody could have one or two ideas of who to go to. I went to a local gathering for the mental health community.
Okay.
And I mentioned that there is the Human Rights Commission. And they're like, oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just even that one little bit of providing information
if everybody can do it, then.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. So that's my suggestion.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion.
For us, or it's for the community?
What's that?
Are we looking at education ideas for this group, or it's more for the whole community?
Well, I think it could be both. You know, things that we still need to be educated on so that we have a better idea of how we can serve the community. And then things that we've already met on that we could have ideas for what we need to help the community learn, you know, have the community learn more about. So it could be both. And then hopefully we will see Fernando here back on January 7th.
He's probably visiting all of the committees who all hope to have him.
Yeah. See, they all woo him like we do. We should have had cookies.
We should.
Yeah, we should. We didn't know we'd have, we had a visiting dignitary.
Just food for thought. It seems like with our, and maybe I'm out of place for talking about this, but I think with our political climate, I saw something about sanctuary cities, and when I was on that the forum that
for
was brought
Isaiah
up.
The Isaiah Project.
Yeah, I don't, and this is a human right. I think there's a great concern among, I'm going to say, our immigrant neighbors and such, fear of being deported, yes, based on campaign talk, and I don't, you know, it might be something to be forward thinking about as a Human Rights Commission, to be thinking about how we may want to address that when the time comes. Just throwing it out there. I mean,
because we are a sanctuary city, right?
Is that right?
Well, are we?
There's a number in the country, and it is a designation. I've never heard that Wilmer is a sanctuary city.
I've never heard that. That was news to me.
Okay.
I know
so we're not.
I don't know that.
How do we become one?
That's somebody's talking about eliminating.
I don't think there are going to be more sanctuary cities.
Right.
Yeah, well, I think you could sneak it in there.
The big cities, they're really large cities that are sanctuary cities.
San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago.
Yeah.
Tucson. Yeah.
That question was asked at one of the debates, I know.
Right. And I don't know, like I said, I'm just putting it out there so that when you're reading or that term comes up, that you can take a look at it, and just we can be thinking about it, because it might, as the new president takes control, there might be a lot of upheaval. I don't know.
There would be public hearings on this, I would assume. But I don't know if that was established by an executive order, or was it established by a law? If it was an executive order, then it could be just taken away, just done.
Right, yeah. And it sounds
isn't
like.
Isn't it more local? I mean,
I think
they
some
were
of the communities, like Los Angeles, some of the police departments are deciding that they're not going to hold immigrants if they're for the federal authorities to come and get them. They don't feel like they want to do that, unless it's a egregious kind of crime or something like that. But if it's a petty crime, they're not going to do that. I know the commissioner, in an article I read, they're not going to come up to people and say, let's see your papers. They're not going to, you know, intimidate or do that. So
I think in the big cities, they're concerned about being given the assignment from the federal government to handle, to actually do all the front end stuff of all the things. And when you look at deporting 2-3 million or 4, whatever that is, that's a colossal, colossal issue. You know, you're talking thousands of people. And even in a community like this, it would be a significant effect on our municipal budget.
Yeah. You know, the school budget?
People are scared.
Yeah.
Kids are scared.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people are scared. It's reality. I mean, Wednesday, the ELL classroom at the high school, it was almost like they were triaging out there all day because kids were scared. Their parents were saying, we're going to get deported. And they're refugees. They're not even immigrants. They're refugees. But, you know, kids don't really know. And even our smaller refugees, a lot of them are scared. And, I mean, it is a very real issue right now.
Yeah. So I'm just planting the seed, so to speak, to be looking at it and maybe as a committee to talk about it, you know, and look at articles and stuff, something to.
And I know in Tucson, within the church communities, their organizations would work with immigrants and provide sanctuary in the church. And that was in Tucson, and because I was out there and worked with immigrants,
sure,
in different organizations for a while too. So, yeah, it's a very scary prospect for.
And maybe with your connections down there, maybe you can pick their, see what their thought patterns are, and
well.
That would be a whole other lecture, but the sanctuary
the
thing.
Church community, I mean, going to like the Wilmer Area Ministerial Association, and you know, if they're having people coming to them already, you know, bringing them in the loop of that too.
Yeah, and the problem, it came up, you know, with Family Promise, mm-hmm, and there was some people looking for housing because they were homeless, but they did not have the right. And the problem with that was they couldn't do a background check.
Right.
Not that they didn't want somebody because they didn't have papers.
Right. Right.
So,
yes. To me, this would seem like an issue that we should fast track.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? We wondered what would be our issue, sort of like St. Cloud having theirs, you know, with the homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And not that we don't have homelessness, but right, if we think about our most pressing problems.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, there's a couple of issues. The one is just plain fear, because I think many of our residents who are fearful perhaps have no reason to be fearful.
Mm-hmm.
The refugees, for example, I don't think there's anything
that's
on the table.
It's all legal.
Yeah, they're legally here. But I know I was at Somali Star the day after the election, and there was a lot of fear there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're scared.
So but there's also
now, if
other
you're an
things
illegal immigrant, then I'm sure there's fear there, and that some were founded, and that would be a different thing to address.
And there's children that were brought as babies or toddlers that are
the
living
dreamers,
here.
Yeah,
right?
That are living here now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is the only country they know.
Yeah.
That's a lot of my students. I have a lot of undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
there's
let's
a lot
make that
high
part
school
of the agenda, yeah, then for next, or well, in January next year.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you for bringing that.
Yeah,
I'll get some information from I was just checking in. I keep in touch with the Samaritans group and Nomás Muertes groups that are in the desert.
Oh, sure.
Just
well, see if you can pick their brain a little.
Well, I can read it, but if I can get the right page up, I might.
Well, I know, for example, a couple months ago when Posey was picked up, I haven't heard anything more about it, but there's a lot of concern locally about it. You know, that this young fellow who worked at the barber.
Well, he was John's barber.
Yeah, he was my barber, too, and all of a sudden he was picked up, and there was a lot of concern about it for a while, a lot of letters written and so on. And I think there was a lot of sympathy. Hey, here's a fellow who's been a barber here for 20 years, and poof, he's gone.
Why was he gone?
I thought he had some felony.
Well, yeah, I mean, he had served. A condition of being a refugee in the first place was that he'd be law-abiding. But he was a felon, but he had served his prison time 20 years ago.
So
why
was he
now,
a refugee or an immigrant?
Nothing new had happened.
He was a refugee or immigrant? Do you know?
I believe, I'm probably not the right guy.
Okay.
I think he was originally a refugee.
Okay.
But I don't think anything new had happened.
Right.
They weren't responding to something new. They were responding to something way, way back.
Okay.
And
his
what
time
the,
served.
Yeah. Well, I can find out from my friends in Arizona.
We'll come okay. with ideas.
Yeah, very good. All right, well, if there's nothing further, I think we can end the meeting then.
I move we adjourn.
Very good.
A second.
Thank you. Everyone have a great holiday season.
Yeah, that's right, it's coming.
Happy holidays.
Doesn't feel like it today.
No. Well, on Friday, Jill.
Hang on.
Yeah, right, hang on.
Yeah.
Hang on.
One of the recent emails I got from my friends with the submissions is the number of people sitting at the border in Nogales waiting.